Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in New York City. Since 2004, she's covered the Giants, A's, and 49ers as a photographer. And from 2014 to 2018, she helped build the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum Profile and Photo Archive. In 2021, she and Jeff Idelson co-founded Grassroots Baseball, whose mission is to promote and celebrate the amateur game around the globe with a focus on growing interest and participation at the youngest levels. The author of Grassroots Baseball, Where Legends Begin, her name, Jean Fruit. And I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Grasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jean Fruth, the author of Grassroots Baseball, Where Legends Begin. So let's talk about where your legend began. Let's go back to New York City, Jean. Your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
Oh, Jack. Well, thanks for having me. I grew up in New York City. I grew up actually in the projects in Chelsea. So we had a pretty difficult family life. You know, not really that much to share there. It was a tough beginning. A lot of alcoholism in the family and poverty. My parents really struggled, as their parents did. But the great thing and the great news that came out of it later in life, my dad successfully went through rehab and my parents are still together living in New York. And though they have some health issues, they're actually doing quite well. So a rough, rocky road beginning, but a lot of happiness later on.
And every day they're singing the praises of their daughter, Jean. So, Jean, where did your love affair with the camera begin?
Well, my high school had a darkroom, and I was always interested in doing darkroom work. That's where I thought my path was going to be, actually, when I first started. And my first professional photography job was working in a darkroom with two women who did portraiture in Northern California. And then I started to shoot with them. And then my journey into photography at that point began. But my I still have a love for the darkroom, though, of course, I had to leave it behind. But the way an image came alive and the hours I spent in the darkroom, it taught me a lot. It really actually teaches a lot about photography and the process. So I'm glad I had a start there.
You're a world-class storyteller, and you do it not through words, but via the camera. How so?
Well, that's what we're supposed to do as photojournalists and as photographers. Our job is to tell stories. A good picture really doesn't need a caption. A good picture tells the story. In an instant, you look at it and you know the story, or you're interested in the story enough to have another look. And that's what we're supposed to do as photographers. That's what my job is to tell stories through pictures.
Speaking of which, Jean, you take 10 or 15 pictures of the same person. And then you say, that's the one. Jean, how do you know?
Oh, isn't that a question? So one of my most important mentors is an editor, and you need to know what a good picture is in order to take one. So I'm very grateful. I learned from the best, Steve Fine, who is the former picture editor at Sports Illustrated in its heyday. He taught me what a good picture is and certainly what a good picture isn't. And editing is part of our job. So choosing the right one and knowing the right one when you shoot it is incredibly important. Steve also worked for the New York Times. He's a brilliant editor, and I still work with him today to make sure I'm choosing the right one. So I'm still a student.
It seems to me that every great photographer is also a great listener. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'm deaf in my left ear, so I start at 50%. In some ways, I'm not really listening at all. Maybe this is not the answer, but I mean, when I shoot in different countries, and I, you know, many times I don't know the language, which of course is a great disadvantage, but I kind of block out all the noise and I just concentrate on what I see. So, I guess that's my answer is, I block it all out and it's just what I'm seeing and super focused on making a great picture.
Where did you get your love for baseball, Jane Fruth?
Well, I grew up in a hockey household. My grandfather, though, was a Mets fan, and he would listen to games on the radio. He always had a transistor radio in the kitchen, and the Mets were always on. And my first thought of baseball is, wow, they just play it every single day, all the time. My love for baseball came when I started coaching my son in rookie ball and then in Little League. And that's really, it was the grassroots game that I fell in love with baseball, the culture of the game, the people who surround it. That was what was interesting to me. And that was my first love of baseball was the grassroots game, was Little League.
Who were your baseball heroes as a young kid?
Well, I didn't really have baseball heroes. I always considered myself a Mets fan, and Mike Piazza, was a standout for me. I didn't pay that much attention. I was fascinated with Daryl Strawberry. So the Mets were always, present and around for me in New York. And then really just following the grassroots journey, my son's journey, and then becoming a shooter in Major League Baseball. It really became about the relationships all around baseball and not one team anymore.
We're talking to Jane Fruth, and since 2004, she's covered the San Francisco Giants, Oakland A's, and San Francisco 49ers as a photographer. When we come back, we're going to ask her, how did she ever break into sports photography? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula with Jane Fruth. And from 2014 to 2018, she helped build the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum Profile and Photo Archive. Jane, 2004, you get to cover the Giants, the A's, and the 49ers. How did that ever happen?
Well, portraiture was where I started, but it certainly wasn't a passion for me. It was just where the opportunity was, and certainly a great training ground for many reasons. I started submitting images to local newspapers, and they hired me to shoot high school, college sports, and then professional sports. They had five local papers, and once I started shooting sports, I knew I just had to figure out a way to make this my path. The feeling I got then is still the same feeling I have today when I go out and shoot a game. It's this incredible adrenaline rush and excitement for what I might capture. It's just a feeling of being so alive. And my good friend and one of my first mentors, Baron Woolman, who recently passed away at the age of 83, he was the first photographer for Rolling Stone magazine. And when I started shooting sports, Baron connected me with his good friend, Michael Zagaris, who is known as in the baseball world as the Z-Man. And Z is still the Oakland A's photographer and the San Francisco 49ers photographer. He was kind enough to take me under his wing, and he had such a unique style of shooting. And so I owe a ton to Z for getting me out on the Oakland A's and the San Francisco 49ers. And then, of course, I was covering the Giants for the papers. And what a tremendous experience.
Okay, I quote you now. The best part of a baseball game is before the first pitch. Everything happens before the game begins. Really?
Well, that certainly ties back into my training with Z. The Oakland Coliseum is the only ballpark left that doesn't have railings in front of the dugout. It's just a very relaxed place to shoot. Well, before COVID, of course. And we would hang out in front of the visiting team's dugout, shooting pictures with wide angle lenses and hearing stories from players and coaches. And Z has an incredible ability to connect with people. And that's always been my style as well. First really learned in portraiture. And, when people think of sports photographers, they think of long telephoto lenses, which I certainly love too. Capturing action is certainly exhilarating. But there's so much more to the game. And this connection was so interesting to me. And it really made for terrific pictures.
Let's go back to October 2016. You spend time in Chicago and Cleveland to cover my Cubs versus the Indians in the World Series. Tell us about Wrigley Field and tell us about that World Series, please.
Well, I'll start with wow. First of all, it's, of course, a charming and historic ballpark. I mean, your Cubs performance, but starting with Wrigley Field, I mean, the brick, the ivy, the manual scoreboard. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's such a great place to watch or cover a game, you know, built in 1914 as the oldest National League park. I mean, I love all the history there. It certainly gives you goosebumps. And you think about Babe Ruth hitting his called shot home run there in the 32 World Series, Hack Wilson, who had a major league record of 191 RBIs in one season playing for the Cubs. I mean, all that history. And when I was there, all the Hall of Famers, so many of them were there during that World Series. Fergie Jenkins, Greg Maddux, Ryan Sandberg, and of course, and Billy Williams. And then those who weren't there, Ernie Banks and Ron Santo. I mean, it's a place steeped in history. Shooting that World Series is certainly one of the highlights of my career. And then shooting the parade afterwards. I started at sunrise and I went late into the night and I captured every inch of that city celebrating. And what a celebration it was. And, you know, as photographers, we want every World Series to go 7 games. Because the more the better. But every one of those games, and of course, game 7, that'll be, like I said, forever a highlight.
We're ahead, I think, by 3 runs in the ninth. And this Rajay Davis hadn't hit a home run since August. And he hits a 3-run homer against us, Chapman, right? And then at the end of 9, tied up, and the rain comes. And I thought, my goodness.
It was all about the rain. The rain was a game changer. You know, somebody was looking over Wrigley Field. And of course, this was, you know, in Cleveland, but and took care of the Cubbies. So, yeah, the rain was a game changer. We were all out on the field and then we all run in. They tell us to go in, get off the field. And we're drying. We didn't even finish drying off our equipment. We were just drenched. And they said, if you want to continue shooting, you have to get out there now. And all of us just beelined and ran as quick as we could back into our positions to finish shooting that game. And yeah. And of course, we all know what happened after that. And then the city of Chicago celebrated. I got in my car that night, drove back to Chicago because I didn't know when the parade was going to start, but I knew I had to be early and ready to go. And it was a series that we will always remember. So, so exciting. And I was so excited for the city.
We're talking to Gene Pruth. If you want to learn more, www.grassrootsbaseball.org. Gene, for almost 20 years, you've covered and watched Major League athletes, baseball, football. How good are these people?
Well, I get they're the best of the best. I mean, few people realize how hard it is to make it to the major leagues. I mean, the trajectory is insane. I mean, even the guys who are not star players are certainly incredible athletes. I mean, it has been, you know, an honor to follow the careers of guys like Clayton Kershaw, Albert Pujols, Ichiro Suzuki, David Ortiz. I mean, and more recently, guys like Mike Trout. They're the best of the best.
Of all the major league parks, which one has the best food?
That's a great question. Well, I never eat ballpark food. I usually pack a sandwich just to keep it simple. But it certainly looks delicious. And on one of my assignments for the National Baseball Hall of Fame's magazine, Memories and Dreams, I had to shoot ballpark food. And the outrageous stuff was the most fun, really. Bacon dipped in chocolate sauce. That was, where was that? That was Citi Field. Donut burgers, I think, was in Philly. Hot dogs with everything on them, including Fruit Loops. I have to remember that was Cleveland. I mean, the list goes on and on. So for me, the outrageous food is the most fun. Like, why not? You're at the ballpark.
From 2014 to 2018, you helped build the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum Profile and Photo Archive. Talk about that chapter of your life.
Yeah, as my career progressed in professional sports, I became the traveling photographer for the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. And the museum wanted to add a contemporary voice to their marketing to attract a younger audience through social media platforms, which was becoming more important outlet for baseball. And the goal was to tie today's game to history. So my role and projects ended up being far more reaching. I was adding to the museum's permanent archives. I was shooting for their magazine, Memories and Dreams, and of course, contributing the content across the social media platforms. I also had to create photo essays for their website, images for museum exhibits, and portraits and special projects with Hall of Famers, and then, of course, documenting the annual induction ceremony. I mean, they were years of incredible growth for me. I had to learn my baseball history, and my pictures really needed to tell stories. So that was the leap. I became a storyteller thanks to the Baseball Hall of Fame. It was a tremendous challenge, incredibly rewarding. It also gave me a year-round shooting schedule, which I still have today now, shooting for La Vida. So now it's baseball all year round for me, Jack. Spring training, then the regular baseball season, major league season, postseason, and then off to winter league, mostly in Latin American countries. And the Caribbean series, as soon as the Caribbean series is over, I'm heading to Arizona or Florida for spring training. So baseball is always played somewhere.
We're talking to Jean Fruth, and she is one of only 45 Sony Artisans of Imagery worldwide. Paul Cotton, Hall of Fame stuff. And I'm Jack Kula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm host Jack Krasula with Jean Fruth, the author of Grassroots Baseball, Where Legends Begin. Jean, how did it come to be?
As I was traveling the world shooting Major League Baseball, professional baseball, I always took the time to shoot the amateur game, the grassroots game. Everything from sandlots in Mexico, small villages in the Dominican Republic, old guys playing stickball on the streets of New York City. If I was in Japan to shoot the World Baseball Classic, I would take time to shoot a Little League game when I could find one. My archives were growing immensely from all this amateur baseball that I was photographing, and so much of it had never been seen. Then during my tenure with the Baseball Hall of Fame as a traveling photographer, I had the opportunity to meet, photograph, visit with many of its Hall of Famers. And as I heard about their stories growing up, I started to realize, like, how great would it be to tie in these stories, these Hall of Famers' great stories of growing up playing baseball into this amateur baseball, work that I have. And that's how grassroots baseball came about. I worked with Steve Fine, who helped me edit and put together the chapters. And of course, Jeff Idelson, who connected me with many of the legends who participated in the book.
Tell us about Jeff Idelson.
Well, as I'm sure you know the news, Jeff is heading back to Cooperstown to become the Baseball Hall of Fame's interim president. So he's a curtain call for Jeff. The passion he has for that institution, for the museum, and for the game runs deep. And the only thing I would say that runs deeper are his relationships through baseball. And I know you know that, because I'm sure you know him for a long time. But, you know, especially with Hall of Famers, I couldn't be more proud to have Jeff as my partner in grassroots baseball. And, you know, the journey has been just a blast.
The cover of your book, it's a young kid, I think in Cuba, barefoot kid hitting a baseball. An old 50s, car. That's all they have over there. And a bunch of kids sitting on the car. How do you explain the great joy, the celebratory style of play that permeates these Latin American baseball players?
Yeah. I mean, when I started shooting the Major League game, one of the first interests I had was the many players from Latin America. I loved how they had fun in the dugouts, how they celebrated their passion. It didn't take me long. My first trip was to the DR, and I had to find out what was baseball like after meeting these players. And after that first trip, I was hooked. Every winter, I cover baseball somewhere. And the passion and the innocence in, like, the kids, when you see those kids sitting on the car, they're not dreaming of major league contracts. You know, they're just playing the game for love and passion. And that's how it starts. That's how it starts with anything we want to become good at, right? It's the passion. And my favorite event to cover is the Caribbean World Series, because they're playing for country pride and the fans and the players. I mean, every single, you would think there's a home run in the ballpark. It's just so exciting. And it's one of my favorite things to cover in baseball is Latin American baseball.
Paint for us a picture of the hero status of a Vladimir Guerrero in the Dominican Republic, or Pudge Rodriguez in Puerto Rico, you know, or Juan Marichal. How big are these heroes to those countries?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, baseball is king in Latin America. It is the sport. Fans in both the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico adore, support, and follow their fellow countrymen's careers. When they succeed, they become heroes. Vladimir Guerrero is one of only three players in Cooperstown from the Dominican Republic, of course, along with Juan Marichal and Pedro Martinez. I mean, Pudge is just one of five players from Puerto Rico with a plaque, including Orlando Cepeda, Alomar, Edgar Martinez, and Pudge's hero, the great one, right, Roberto Clemente. I covered both of their returns home after earning Hall of Fame election, and the outpouring for both were incredible. They both love giving back at home. It means so much to their fellow countrymen, and both Vladdy and Pudge are so very proud of their heritage. Following both of them, and I spent a week with both of them, and it wasn't a one-day celebration. It was a multi-day celebration of, I mean, Pudge, we traveled up and down Puerto Rico, and everyone wanted to celebrate him. Vladdy was the longest parade that went hours and hours from Santo Domingo to his small town of Don Gregorio, and then they partied into the night on a stage and in the streets, and the outpouring was just was nothing like I've ever seen before.
We're talking to Gene Futh. If there's any listener that's ever on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and you got the $1 million question, and it's about baseball history, save your call a friend, and you call Gene Futh, and I guarantee you, you'll win the million. This woman knows everything about the history of baseball. Tell us about Cuba, Gene, and the Cuban people.
Cuba is such a magical place for me. I had the opportunity to visit there many times over the years and shoot baseball. But the architecture, like you say, the cars, the music, and the art is really off the charts. I mean, what Cuba lacks in resources, they certainly make up for in talent, creativity, and resourcefulness. The people of Cuba are by far Cuba's biggest resource. I mean, every game feels like a playoff game there, meaning the stands are full, the fans are excited, the players are performing at their highest level. It's a magical place to go. And it hasn't, I mean, a lot of the photographs that I have of fans and in the stands, many of them now, it's of course changed, but it wasn't too long ago that there wasn't even a cell phone present in the stands. Everybody's just paying attention to the game. Nobody's looking at cell phones. Everybody's completely present, and you find baseball everywhere you go. It's the kids are outside playing. They're not inside playing video games, a little bit more now, but not too much. And I just can't wait to go back and have a chance to shoot again there.
Okay, let's jump from Latin America now to Japan. And there's this man, Ichiro Suzuki, okay? He played 9 seasons in the Japanese Professional League. He had 1,300 hits in Japan. Then he comes to America, Seattle. He plays 19 seasons. He gets 3,089 hits in America. I think there's only 29 men in the history of baseball with 3,000 hits, okay? One season, he had, 262 hits, the all-time record for one season, and 10 consecutive 200-hit seasons. No one ever done that. Talk to us about this little guy who slapped the ball, Ichiro.
What I used to work with, well, I still do, when I was side-by-side with Michael Zagaras and we were playing against Ichiro, he would say, "I hate the way he slaps the ball." And then he'd say, "I sure wish he would do it for us." So, I mean, baseball in Japan is far more regimented than in the U.S. I mean, they practice longer and harder. The universal respect for the game by those who play it is really first instilled in Little League. You know, Little League, which I photographed, the players have set time for pregame workouts. The team captains exchange lineup cards with umpires, and all the players bow to each other and the umpires before the game. I mean, out of respect, Ichiro's story is incredible. I mean, like you said, you know, everything that he accomplished, three-time MVP and all the batting titles before he came to the U.S. I mean, once he arrived in Seattle, he only improved. So he did so, you know, playing in a country where he didn't know many players, didn't speak the language, the food was different, his wife, they didn't have any family or friends around, and he still managed to be Rookie of the Year, set records for hits, and 10-time All-Star. And the 3,000 Hits Club, like you say, I had the opportunity to follow Ichiro during that time and capture his 3,000 hit. And it was a fun journey. Me and all the Japanese photographers and photo wells going from place to place waiting for that magical moment to happen. So Cooperstown certainly awaits him. I can't wait for 2025.
We're talking to Gene Foof, and I'm Jack Brasula. And this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Zula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Gene Foof. And in April of 2019, she and Jeff Idelson co-founded Grassroots Baseball. I quote you now, Gene. I've learned that the game is much more than just a sport. It's dreams and aspirations for so many youngsters wherever I go. The culture of baseball is so much bigger than just what happens on the field. Please.
Well, Grassroots Baseball, that project, after completing my book, I decided I wanted to grow the Grassroots Baseball into something bigger. You know, baseball can be an expensive sport, especially in the U.S. when the playing field is no longer level. And as I traveled around the country and the world, kids who come from well-to-do families are now playing travel ball year-round, private instructions, enrolled in expensive tournaments. And this leaves other kids behind. You know, less kids are playing sports, more kids are playing video games. And it's proven that kids who play sports have better outcomes in life, health, grades, work relationships. And at this point in my career as a photographer, I really wanted to surround my work with purpose and give back to the sport that has really given me so much. And doing it with photography is certainly a blessing. And that's how Grassroots Baseball came about. I reached out to Jeff, asked if he would be interested in joining me, and lucky for me, he said yes, and we started Grassroots Baseball. We set out in 2019 on our maiden voyage along historic Route 66. We put together clinics for young players in underprivileged areas with Hall of Famers who joined us, retired players Johnny Bench, George Brett, Trevor Hoffman, Ozzie Smith all joined us, Jim Tomey with some of the guys, Billy Hatcher in Williams, Arizona, where he grew up along Route 66, and it was an incredible voyage. The players all received a new Rawlings baseball glove and a baseball. And Goose Gossage was our national spokesman. He joined us for a few clinics, and he was terrific with the kids. It was an incredibly fulfilling start to our program. And I'm proud to say that Grassroots Baseball is now an official not-for-profit.
All right. There's a little town in Pennsylvania called Williamsburg. And in, I think, late August every year, teams come from all over the world to play in the Little League World Series. Tell us about that experience each year.
you know, what you see on TV is terrific, but experiencing it from the opening day parade in Williamsport to closing ceremonies, I'm in awe of how the Little League staff flawlessly handles all the logistics, the players, the moving parts, and it's kids having fun is always first and foremost in this, the whole tournament. Coaches, players, parents, and fans respecting the game is a must. And one of the things that stayed with me that says it all is when a team is eliminated from the Little League World Series, they don't stop playing and go home. They continue to play in what they call crossover games, with the idea being that it's all about playing and for the love of the game. So you see these kids who lost and their heads are down during the first inning, and before you know it, they're back laughing, they're competing, they're having fun, they're playing hard. It's an awesome experience all around. And I have a good Little League World Series moment. I was walking down Main Street shooting their parade, getting so excited to be in Williamsport shooting the Little League World Series. And there's all these fans that are waving to me, calling my name. And as I said, I'm deaf in my left ear, so sometimes you think you hear your name and you don't. And they were all Japanese fans. And I look over and I'm like, why would they know me? And as I got closer, I realized it was a family. A team that I met when I was over in Japan. And I shot their opening day of Little League in Tokyo, Japan. And I said, what are you doing here? And they said, we made it. We made it all the way to the Little League World Series. So I ended up shooting this team's very first day in Japan, in Tokyo, Japan. And then they ended up winning the Little League World Series. So I shot their very last day of their season, which was in Williamsport. It was kind of a fun moment.
You've been around tens of thousands of little kids all over the world who love baseball. What have they taught you, Jane Fruth?
Oh, that's a great question. More than anything else, they taught me to continue to do what makes me feel most alive. I mean, kids are in the moment, aren't they? Even when they're facing tremendous adversity in life, when they're playing, they can just let it all go. Being in the moment, away from our cell phones, letting our minds not wander to other things. I think just doing something that gets you so jazzed that you have to stay present all the time.
All right. You mentioned a few minutes ago something called Route 66. For us older people, we remember Route 66. But for the younger audience, what's Route 66?
Well, like the song says, it winds from Chicago to LA. It's the mother road. You know, you think about the early days and the romance of the late 20s and 30s. Families would set out and travel the mother road. They would travel Route 66. You know, it's a symbol of America, America on the move, having adventures, vintage cars, neon lit motels, diners, old gas stations. I mean, its impact on American culture from its inception through the Great Depression, and then its heyday as a travel destination. And then, of course, its decline and eventual displacement as an interstate, you know, with a new interstate highway system. So we meet folks all the time taking the journey, telling their stories, like you say, the older ones traveling as kids with their families. You know, like baseball, Route 66 is about nostalgia and it's romantic. And so much of it is still there. Tourists are still there. And the interest in Route 66 continues on.
Let's go back 20 years. There was this man, Charles Kuralt, on CBS Sunday Morning, the Sunday Morning Show. And he would go and take us to all these little towns, right, off the big highways. So you've driven. Tell us about the towns and the people that make up the little towns.
That's probably one of the best parts of the journey for me, meeting the people in these small towns. You know, as I said, I mean, my camera has been an entree into many worlds. Like, for instance, spending time in towns like Baxter Springs, Kansas, where I met a man named Wayne Medcalf. And Wayne is the town barber in Baxter Springs. But he also served as the Little League president for 33 years. He's still the district administrator, and he's 84 years old. And he mows the lawn every morning, you know, and mows the grass on the field. and he still does all the field's maintenance. And thanks to his care, his passion, energy, commitment, the kids in his community have been provided with joy and opportunity for more than half a century. And he's the man who has dusted off this wonderful home for so many young ballplayers, you know, and it's Wayne and other devoted souls like him around the country that we can't do without. You know, it's dedicated volunteers, and that's what you find in these small towns. Kids, parents, and volunteers who are committed to baseball, to kids, and they make leagues run everywhere. I mean, they're the fabric of communities. I met a guy named Mike Fuller, a coach, father, grandfather in Amarillo, Texas, and he grew up going to Gold Sox games with his parents and brothers and friends at Potter Memorial Stadium. And then years later, after the Gold Sox left town, he spearheaded an effort to take this old classic stadium and refurbish it for a high school baseball team, which he also coaches. And he does all the fundraising himself and worked on getting a new scoreboard. And it's just incredible what people like Wayne and Mike and take pride in their communities and what they accomplish. And that's what you, that's who you meet on Route 66 in these small towns.
If you want to learn more, www.grassrootswithanSbaseball.org. Okay. Let's pretend you go back to the 20s and you get to photograph this Sultan of SWAT, Babe Ruth. How would you have him pose, Gene?
Oh, well, you know, those classic poses that that photographers would do. The portraits of those days were just so beautiful. I actually have many of them and admire them. And I'm all about learning from those who came before us. And the classic photographers, you know, did such a great job. But I'd put him at home plate. I'd have him, you know, pointing with his bat. I'd want those classic shots for sure. And then I would just want the Babe in action. Maybe I could bring my Sony 400 digital lens and A1 camera and shoot him. Is that possible in the 20s? Is that allowed in this fantasy?
Anything's possible. Gene Pruth, you're an angel of hope and of dreams, which we badly need today. So thank you. Please keep up the great, great work.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.
Believe in yourself.